Hi, I'm Steve Mabb, Chair of the Australian Shareholders Association, and we're proud to be hosting the 2024 Investor Conference in Melbourne from the 19th to the 21st of May. And we're stoked that Phil, the host of this podcast, is going to be our special guest MC. If you haven't heard much about the ASA conference, it's a flagship event that attracts around 300 investors and industry professionals, including the chair of National Australia Bank this year, the chair of AGL. We have Dr. Sam Hupert, the founder and CEO of ProMedicus, and we've also got Richard White, the founder and CEO of WiseTech, coming along with many others. For a limited time, new members can enjoy special pricing on registration for the upcoming conference, along with a complimentary 12-month digital membership with the ASA. That's 2-day conference registration plus 1-year ASA membership for $499, a saving of $150. Simply search for Australian Shareholders Conference Register, click on 2-day conference non-member, enter the discount code MEM, as in member, 499, the numbers 499, so that's MEM499 to claim your special offer. Come along and meet me and Phil at the conference. We look forward to seeing you there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shares for Beginners.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You need to understand the business, you need to understand the financials, the drivers of the stock, the sector, the competitors. So it is a lot of work to be able to keep on top of all of those factors that could drive the stock. And unless you have a large pool of money that will allow you to adequately diversify through having a number of stock holdings across different countries and across different sectors, you are exposed to that single stock shock.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners. I'm Phil Muscatello. When I started this podcast, I could barely spell ETF. I didn't realise how much ETFs in their various forms had become such a big part of the investing landscape. And I know from your questions how much you want to know about them. So who better to talk to than someone who helps to manage an actual ETF? G'day, Emily O'Neill.
Hello, how are you, Phil?
Now, Emily is from eInvest, a company that creates portfolios that trade as actively managed ETFs. How did you come to work in finance?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because ever since I was very young, I have been passionate about the industry. I'm not really sure where it came from, but I think I was just attracted to how the movement of capital is such an important area of our economic system. And I always kind of thought that people who worked in finance were quite intelligent, and it's obviously a very fast-paced industry. So it was kind of something that I just always had my eyes on and worked towards that. My goal when I was, I think I was about 14 or 15, was that I wanted to be CEO of Macquarie Bank. So definitely a way to set some high expectations for myself. Look out, Shamara.
So at what sort of age did that urge come about? From a very young age?
Probably about 8 or 9. Yeah. I don't have any family who works in the industry.
There's no one, your dad or mum?
No,
push
not
you
at
in
all.
This,
it was just, yeah, it just kind of really seemed like something that I was attracted to, and I was, you know, always counting my parents' coins and things like that. So it's just an industry I really wanted to get involved with. And as I was working, I kind of developed a bit of a passion for sustainable investing. Mm-hmm. And I was previously working in investment bank and doing some banking finance type things. And I just thought sustainable finance was a way to make a positive contribution. It was also a very growing industry. And so I put my hand up for a role at eInvest to help manage their sustainable fund there.
Because this is something that I've been trying to achieve with the podcast, is to, first of all, show that the industry is actually a great place to work in. And people are lovely in the industry as well, and especially for women to consider this as an option, because it is still a bit of a male-dominated industry, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, if you look at the statistics, you know, only 30% of women in the ASX 200 are represented on boards. of the chair people, it's only 18%. So there's definitely a long way to go, but it has definitely made improvements to make it a more friendly environment for both genders and to help recruit women into the industry. And it is an absolutely a very rewarding career because you do get to meet with lovely people from all backgrounds of life and skill sets. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a background in finance or a finance degree to join. You know, I work with people who have started their careers in all kinds of industries, and actually corporate experience is really important to bring those new, I guess, diversity of opinions into the industry.
You said before about being fascinated by the movement of capital. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so the movement of capital is kind of, I guess, one of the big drivers of the economy. So people have excess funds that they may need to, that they can lend out for people who are in fund deficit to do all kinds of activities. So to facilitate investments in, you know, building a new office tower or to invest in their own business to grow. So it's all about basically the borrowing and the lending of money. And that's where finance kind of steps in.
And you were 14 and fascinated by that.
Yes, I was. It seems weird, but it's true.
Okay, so let's move on to ETFs. Now, what are the advantages of ETFs? And you have a little something you wanted to say about that before?
Yeah, so where eInvest is an active ETF provider. So I just wanted to quickly say that we will be just making general comments here only. It's not financial advice. So make sure you consult a professional and read the PDS at eInvest.com.au before.
And, and anyone would be an idiot to listen to me for for financial advice.
So we think ETFs are a great way to provide exposure to the stock market. It stands for Exchange Traded Funds, and basically it's a portfolio of a bunch of holdings that you can easily buy and sell on the stock exchange, just like you would buy any other stock on the market. So they're a great way to diversify your portfolio because you get exposure to certain sectors or to certain indices. And we're particularly a active ETF provider. So what that means is you're getting professional management of the portfolio. So they're stock picking, if you like.
Okay, so with ETFs, you're buying a basket of stocks. You're not confined to one single share, are you? It's all put together for under some kind of philosophy. Is
exactly.
That how it works?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you get basically, when you buy a unit or a value on through an ETF, you're actually buying a portfolio of different companies. So there's all different types of ETFs. So you have passive ETFs, which look to track an index or to a certain sector.
Give us an example of something like that.
Yeah, so for example, you might have a ETF that tracks the ASX 200 or buys the technology index, for example. Or you can have an actively managed portfolio like IMPQ, which is the fund that I help to manage, listed on the stock exchange. And that is basically focused on small and middle companies that are contributing to what we call a sustainable future. So you can get exposure to really interesting parts of the stock exchange, basically, through just buying one name on the stock exchange.
So what's the difference between an ETF and a managed fund?
So they can be similar. An active ETF is a managed fund. So it's basically there's portfolio managers who help to stock pick, buy and sell different stocks. And they'll also typically create financial models. So they're forecasting the revenue and how that looks and running valuation analysis. And they will actually be able to pivot their investment decisions based on things that are happening in the economy or things that are happening on a sector-by-sector basis or across different geographies.
And I guess they're doing a lot of research, and active managers are doing a lot of research into picking the companies that they think will be most advantageous.
Exactly. So that's the benefit of an active ETF is you're getting the professional management. So they are doing the research into the companies, in-depth research through sector analysts. So sector analysts are people who are skilled in one type of industry, whether that's mining or retail, and they're really trying to generate returns that beat their benchmark.
But coming back to the difference between a managed fund and an ETF.
Yeah, so a managed fund is typically, it can be an unlisted, so you can't access it through the stock exchange. So you actually have to apply to buy units in that fund through the provider itself. So it's
and there's a minimum, often a minimum investment
exactly,
as well.
Exactly. So you have a minimum investment. With ETFs, you're not restricted to a minimum. You can buy one unit. It's just whatever your broker restricts you on a dollar value. It can be $500. There's ones out there with a $50 minimum.
On this podcast, we've spoken before. One of my previous guests uses the term single stock shock. What's the importance of diversification?
Yeah, exactly. So this is a huge one because you don't want to put all of your eggs in one basket. So especially during COVID, where there's stocks that are really going to underperform or might outperform, it's really important that the company's not running out of cash. So diversification is really essential to avoid those large movements in your portfolio. So it actually means not having a large or too much of a large weighting to one type of stock, specific stock, or one type of sector or geography. So, you can diversify by industry. So across financials, retail, again, mining, for example. But you can also get diversification exposure through size of the company. So you might be investing in large companies all the way down to what we call microcaps or really small companies, and also across geography. So you could have developed markets or developing markets and in investing styles. So there's what we call growth stocks versus value stocks.
I think, I'm throwing this question in here now. I think there's also a misunderstanding about diversification that just if you're in a passive index fund, say that just invests in the top 200 companies on the ASX, that's not real true diversification, is it?
Well, it depends on your overall portfolio, I guess. So a passive fund will track an index. Like I mentioned before, you don't have a professional choose the stocks that go into the portfolio. You're just moving along with the market or that specific ETF, a passive ETF that you're tracking. So you are exposed to the ups and the downs of the market. You don't have a professional trying to outperform or pick the best stocks. So you're kind of getting the good, the bad, and the ugly, I guess. So it really depends on your entire portfolio. It can be a good way to diversify in some aspects, but you should definitely supplement that, we believe, with an active ETF like IMPQ, which looks at those small and middle cap companies. We are an active manager.
Do you have a definition of small cap?
Yeah, so our portfolio is small to mids. So we have a weighted average market capitalization of $1.7 billion. So it's a little bit on the upper end of small, but typically we define it as outside the ASX 300. So the ASX 300 is the top 300 companies listed on the stock exchange by value. So that is amount of stocks times the value of the stock.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So when you're looking at these different shares, like a huge amount of shares on the stock market in Australia are small miners and biotech companies. Do you have any other kind of sector allocation that you think about when you're putting together portfolios?
Yeah, absolutely. So we like our biggest exposure to sectors are in the healthcare, financials, renewable energy, and also technology stocks. But we are trying to have a diversified portfolio across all of the different sectors. And we also want a bit of global exposure. So even though all of our companies are listed on the ASX stock exchange, we really want some that have revenue all across the world. And an appropriate mix of growth holdings, so they're things like technology or emerging healthcare, but also with more defensive holdings like renewable energy and consumer staples, which tend to be more resilient in terms of fluctuations. But just going back to this kind of one stock shock, imagine if you had all of your money in some tourist related stocks, like for example, Qantas, which at the time of recording has been down 47% this year, or Flight Centre down 70% this year, or even event cinemas. Obviously, they haven't been able to be open for a while, so that's down 36%. 6%. So your portfolio would have really taken a beating. But what happens when you have diversity is that it actually mitigates some of the impact of those large fluctuations, so that if one stock was to underperform really, really poorly, that your whole portfolio wouldn't be down that much.
Emily, another instrument that's used to gain exposure to a variety of assets is an LIC. What's the difference between an ETF like the one that you're managing and an LIC, a listed investment company?
So eInvest products are all ETFs, and that basically, it's an open-ended fund. So it means you can buy and sell units. You don't have to wait for someone to be on the other side of that trade. And you're getting very close to market price. So there's typically what they call a market maker, which is
because that's a big difference, isn't it? ETFs have to have a market maker, don't they?
Exactly.
So they've got what's a market maker doing?
Yeah, so it's like a third-party intermediary who basically helps to manage that the value of the portfolio is similar to what it's trading on the stock exchange. So you actually have to publish your net asset value every second. And a net asset value means that it's an indicative value of the underlying portfolio, so what the portfolio is worth. So INAV is the indicative net asset value, which is a measure for the underlying value of the holdings. So you're getting very close to the value of the underlying, whereas LICs are close-ended funds. So you actually need to wait for a buyer or seller if you want to enter or exit your position in a LIC. And typically that means that they can trade at discounts or premiums to the actual value of the portfolio. And they also don't have to publish their holdings every day. They legally have to publish it once a month. Mm-hmm. So you are getting a little bit more transparency when you invest in an ETF, because you can see the holdings on a weekly basis.
So to put it simply, an ETF, when you're buying or selling it, it's based on the actual value right at that moment, whereas an LIC might be trading at a discount or a premium.
Exactly, yeah. So ETFs, you're getting very close to market value, whereas LICs, because you have to wait for that seller to buy in or for a buyer when you sell out, can trade at those discounts or premiums.
Yeah. Okay, so you're talking about your interest in ESG. What is ESG?
Yeah. So I'm very passionate about ESG. It's what got me into this role. And it basically stands for the environmental, social and governance performance of a company's operations and products and services. So when we talk about environment, we're thinking about things like pollution and greenhouse gas emissions, water management, the circular economy, which is really topical at the moment. And in social, it's all about the treatment of employees and their customers. So product safety, access and affordability, and also engagement of staff. In governance, we're talking about the board. So that's the management of the organization, diversity, independence, cybersecurity risks, and those type of things.
Can you give us an example of a particular company?
We have heaps of examples of ESG-related companies. So we call our sustainable future enablers stocks that are really focused on generating positive, sustainable outcomes to society and to the environment. So stocks in this example is Fluence, which is a water management company, and they're basically delivering decentralized water systems that can be dropped and deployed super fast all over the developing and developed world, and it provides fresh water to those who really need it. So that's an example. Obviously, water scarcity is a huge issue at the moment, and that helps to tackle one of those issues. So they're the types of companies that we're looking for that are really having a positive difference.
So governance, that's an interesting one as well. Can you just go in a little bit deeper into governance?
And, yeah, definitely.
And maybe an example of a company that's got really good governance that, that you can show as an example.
Yeah, so governance is the typical, if you think about historical ESG investing, it does focus around governance. So you're wanting to make sure you have an independent board who's acting in the best interest of long-term shareholders. You want to make sure you have a diverse range of skills and backgrounds in the organization, because they tend to outperform. We're really focused on gender diversity. We know that that's a huge issue that's been going on in corporate world. So only 18% of chairs in the ASX 200 are females. And typically when there's a company that has less than 30% or less than 50% even, we'll write to those management and we will say, we really would encourage you to appoint an independent female director. Here's some suggestions. And in some cases, we might vote against them at the annual general meeting if we don't think that they're taking their active steps. In terms of, like, I actually don't know if I can give a good example of governance because there's no perfect company, I guess. Yeah. But we're actively looking for them to continue to improve. So that also includes things like disclosure, making sure they're giving clear and transparent information to shareholders.
Well, that brings me to my next question, which is about Michael Fraser. Do you know Michael Fraser?
No, I don't.
Apparently he does ESG research. Anyway, so I saw this from a quote from him yesterday on LinkedIn, and he's saying, I have noticed a concerning trend where large ASX-listed companies list all the reasons why they're ethical and should be considered an ESG stock. They join ethical organisations, donate to charity, do community work, promote gender equality and pledge to save the environment, plus more. Investors seem impressed and often suggest them as an ethical company, listing all of the above, box ticking.
Look, it's a really good point.
Does it make it difficult?
Absolutely.
Your job difficult?
Yeah. Well, it's called greenwashing, and it's basically the idea that corporates and sometimes even fund managers actually make claims to be ethical or socially responsible or sustainable when they may not be. So some of the ESG rating systems out there do work in a bit of a ticker box approach. So do you have a diversity policy? Tick. Do you have a sustainability report? Tick. Therefore, they might consider it a sustainable company or it might rank really well. But we do try to break through that noise. And we really are focused on companies that are positively contributing to a sustainable future. And how we do that is focusing on seven key themes. So we're looking at improved social welfare, better educational outcomes, good corporate governance, better health, environmental services, water treatment and renewable energy. And we've actually developed our own internal ESG and E scoring system, and the second E there stands for engagement. We basically have 500 stocks in our database, and what we're really trying to cut through is on the engagement. So that's all about how is the management tackling ESG risks? What are their approach? How aware are they? Can they talk in depth about sustainability? Do they open investor meetings discussing how important sustainability is for their business? And that can kind of break through some of that greenwashing risk, because typically you can see some executives who might say, go and read our sustainability report. It gives you all the information. But you also mm-hmm. see executives that are saying, actually, sustainability is so important for our business because our staff really care about it. Our customers want to see it. It's helped to improve our business outcomes. And they're the types of companies that we're looking for. And I guess a big part of what we're doing is ESG improvement. So that's all about helping those management teams improve their sustainability outcomes. So we're typically working with companies to help them encouraged to discuss their material business risks and what they should be disclosing. An example is a recent community provider of community housing, and we've been working with them to help them discover what are the material, environmental and social risks of their business and how to best disclose those risks.
This is what I found really interesting about this industry. When I came into it, I thought I'd find a lot more red meat capitalism. But everyone's a social justice warrior these days.
And it's really collaborative. People are really working together because I guess the key goal is to improve the social environmental performance of our society. So,
and I think a big part of it as well is how staff and customers are treated. Mm. That's the S part of it,
isn't
it?
That's the S. And actually,
That's really important, isn't it? Because so many companies have not been leaders in this area.
And it's something that kind of got a little bit missed from ESG investors previously. But mm-hmm. obviously with the COVID pandemic, we've actually seen social become a lot more in focus. And that's because we want to make sure that corporates are keeping their staff safe if they're having to go back to work. It was really interesting to see how they dealt with their supply chain. So whether they were just cancelling orders or whether they're actually still working with their suppliers to give the best outcomes for both companies, and also keeping their customers safe, customers that needed hardship, have they been dealing with that? And are they providing that support and easy access to talk to a customer service representative if their customers need it? And that's really going to have huge impacts to the corporate reputation and ongoing customer acquisition going forward.
And no one's going to escape your laser-like focus on this.
Exactly. It is a key component of what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you've started investing in the stock market. Now, how do you track trades, dividends and distributions and all those other goodies? Throw away those clunky spreadsheets with ShareSite. I have my portfolio in ShareSite and everything is automatically recorded. Go to ShareSite.com/shares for beginners and sign up now for a 7-day free trial before taking advantage of 4 free months. That's ShareSite.com/shares for beginners. Let's have a chat about the Future Impact Small Caps Fund Active ETF IMPQ, which you help to manage.
I do.
What do you do? What's the first thing you do when you get to the office and turn on the computer?
What's your day like? My day is I get up, I'm looking at the news, I'm looking at company announcements, I'm looking at our portfolio, what's happened overseas, and day to day is really... we do financial models on all of our companies that we're investing in and also engaging with management, making sure, you know, they are keeping up with their ESG requirements. We're, you know, doing in-depth analysis and research on the companies. And we get in at 7:30 in the morning. So there's
a lot of coffees to start the day.
There is a lot of coffees, very caffeinated.
At what rate are companies being added or taken away from the portfolio?
So we're a pretty active manager. So we're constantly looking at the portfolio, on a day-to-day basis, making sure that all of the stocks meet our valuation criteria. If there's any change in circumstances in the economy, we will adjust the portfolio accordingly.
And how often does that take place?
Daily. So we're looking to increase or reduce weights on a daily basis. And if there's obviously new opportunities that come to market, we will be taking advantage of those by buying or selling other assets in the portfolio.
You use the term weight. Now, this is like a portfolio is, I'm just making a pie chart with my hands here. And the weighting is how that pie is divided, is that right?
Yeah. So if you think of a whole portfolio as 100%, and in our case, in the Invest Future Impact Small Caps Fund, we have about 45 stocks in the portfolio, and they will all get a percentage of that pie each. So it could vary from 1% up to maybe around 4 to 5% or 6% in some cases if we have very strong belief that that stock is going to perform well. But it's basically just the weightings is the piece of the pie that each stock represents.
And how much is income part of the portfolio?
Yeah, so it's not – income isn't a huge focus for us in the portfolio. We're more about capital growth.
So how is the fund tracking?
Yeah, so IMPQ's goal is really to find new and interesting smaller companies that are contributing to a sustainable future. So they're typically solving these large global sustainability challenges like climate change or tackling social issues, and they're usually doing this on a global scale. So the term that I find that really sums up our approach is do good while doing well. And that's all about the idea that our focus on sustainability and ESG performance actually provides capital to firms who are doing good things for the world, but it's also enhancing the returns of our portfolio. So companies that perform well on ESG tend to actually perform, are better at managing risks across the whole of their business. They have less ESG controversies. They have a greater ability to attract and retain key staff. And they tend to be in industries that are growth industries. For example, they're not producing coal, which is phasing out under, you know, new climate goals. And our fund has done really well. So we have received 9% over the benchmark in the last 12 months, which is...
Wow, that's pretty good.
Which is good. And typically, that's what research has suggested, that ESG funds do tend to perform well and typically experience less volatility. And with the COVID downturn, actually a lot of ESG funds tended to outperform, and that kind of renewed the interest in the space.
So are you able to talk about any of your favourite stocks, any personal favourites?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a stock called Genetic Signatures, or GSS, and that is...
Is that the ASX code, is
that
it?
That is the ASX code.
But we're not recommending it for anyone to buy?
Well, you don't want single stock shock like we spoke about before. But basically, it is a rapid pathology testing kit, and so it can detect infectious diseases within 5 hours. And what it was actually able to do is when the COVID crisis hit, it was able to include the COVID test in their kits, which had really strong performance for the fund, which is great. Another really great example is Mesoblast, and that is a
company... They've got a lot of press lately, haven't they, Mesoblast?
So they treat ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome, and obviously that is, with the COVID crisis, lung infection and ARDS is really prominent there, and some of the initial tests have shown a lot of improvement in patients who've had ARDS and using the mesoblast treatment.
Getting back to your fascination with the movement of capital, this is what's happening, isn't it? That capital is helping to develop new technologies, new ideas, new ways of doing things.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what we like to see as a bit of our role. So we participate in capital raisings when companies are raising money to do new projects. And that really helps to facilitate the movement of capital into companies that are doing good things and to help improve and drive those outcomes and away from companies that may not be contributing positively to society or the world in general. So that's what we think is a huge benefit for investing in a sustainable way, is because you're basically driving how the economy moves going forward.
Have you ever made any investing mistakes yourself, personally?
Should have bought more IMPQ in the downturn. I think a lot of my investing background has been in ETFs, actually, yeah. Funnily enough. I think that if you don't have the time to adequately research...
Because you need to do you really do need to research to make any kind of purchase.
You need to understand the business, you need to understand the financials, the drivers of the stock, the sector, the competitors. So it is a lot of work to be able to keep on top of all of those factors that could drive the stock. And unless you have a large pool of money that will allow you to adequately diversify through having a number of stock holdings across different countries and across different sectors, you are exposed to that single stock shock. And I actually did invest in one individual stock, the Reject Shop, back in 2017. It had a really bad run. I was luckily enough able to wait till it recovered and sold out basically the cost I bought it at. But it was just an example of I had that shock to my portfolio because I had invested in that one stock and it didn't do so well.
And did you research it?
I did. Do some research. And of course, I was familiar with the product myself. But it's just an example of how, you know, diversification is key, because unless you can, you know, afford to have those big fluctuations in your portfolio, you should be buying something that gives you diverse exposure.
So in that example with the Reject Shop, what was the mistake that you made?
I think it was just things were changing. People were tending to go to Kmart instead of the Reject Shop, and the stores weren't doing so well, and they weren't very strong online. So I think there was a few issues at stake there. You learn your lesson. And I buy IMPQ. I think it's a great fund for diversification in small and mid-cap stocks. And eInvest has a great range of products.
So what sort of advice would you give first-time investors?
I think the first part is actually education, which is why I feel you're really helping people out there to make smart choices with their money.
So, it's all about me. It's not about the listeners I'm trying to learn.
Exactly. But that's the first step. You need to be able to understand how the stock market even works, because, you know, people dedicate their careers and their education to understanding. So I think just understanding the basic drivers on why shares can move up and down, what sectors will be impacted during economic shocks. And if you don't understand it, you probably shouldn't be investing in it. That's the reality. So always understand the risk with investments and your risk profile, because that's also very important. And like I said, unless you have the time and adequate funds to be able to diversify, you're probably best getting exposure through a portfolio of companies.
Yeah. One of my previous guests, he's got a great quote, and I keep on repeating it, is match your risk to your experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just in terms of your knowledge of business, let's talk about the babysitting matching business that you run. How old were you when you were doing that?
I would have been maybe about 19 or 20, actually.
And you started your own business.
I did.
That's great.
Yeah, so I saw a bit of a need out there because, I mean, at the time, there was only two ways you could engage a babysitter, and that was through an agency, which is typically quite high hourly costs. Or you could go on Gumtree and you could kind of find an individual who's advertising their services, or, you know, pull a number off a Telegraph poll if they had an advertisement out there. But there wasn't really a middle ground. So what I developed was a online system that really allowed a matching portfolio. So all the babysitters had been screened for certain things. I'd met with them, I had discussed, I was familiar with them, and the parents were able to come to me and I'd match them up with a babysitter for a one-time cost. And that really taught me so many things about what I'm doing now. It definitely taught me to specialize in a niche and do it well, provide great customer service so people want to come back, and, you know, word of mouth is super important. But also just the importance of culture of your team. So if you work for team, for if you have employees who are really passionate about what they're doing and they really enjoy working with you, they want you to do better, and they will help you, they will work with you to try and improve your business as well. So they're the kind of key things that I learned, and culture is something that you just can't really put a price on in business.
Would another aspect of that be many businesses now are software as service companies? I know that's not exactly what that was, but the ways of doing business are very different these days, aren't they? And that would be an example of a new way of doing business that you were undertaking with that enterprise.
Exactly. So it's there's a lot more online connections, obviously, as you would know. You know, you can get all types of products through online without having to even see a person face to face. So how do you still ensure that the customer experience is top notch? Because you don't have someone sitting there who's trying to guide you through it. So customer experience is super important. You know, if they need help, how easy is it to access that help? And how quick are they able to access your service? So they're all really important things when you're thinking about facilitating an online business. But in my case, it was a very human capital intensive business because it's all about relationships and people. So even though there was that online platform, you still had to connect with them, you know, maybe over the phone, and you're having babysitters who would meet them face to face. So still that human interaction was really important.
So just before we go, Emily, that you've set up a special landing page for listeners of this podcast that's going to have a lot more information.
Absolutely. So if you want any more further information on ETFs or eInvest and IMPQ, which is the fund that I help to manage, you can go to www.einvest.com.au/shares-for-beginners, and we'll provide all of the links and content there. So thank you.
Emily O'Neill, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
The company and or guest has contributed to the costs associated with producing this episode of Shares for Beginners. Shares for Beginners is for information and educational purposes only. It isn't financial advice, and you shouldn't buy or sell any investments based on what you've heard here. Any opinion or commentary is the view of the speaker only, not Shares for Beginners. This podcast doesn't replace professional advice regarding your personal financial needs, circumstances, or current situation. Thanks to Christopher Soulos for music production with that special Greekalicious flavour. Remember, music always flows, even when the money won't.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.